What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. This episode is just going to be a continuation off of last podcast episode, which was kind of more of a training Q&A style podcast. I didn't realize how little time I had when I hit record, so I answered a few questions, figured I would just post that anyway and then just do a part two, which here I am a day later looking at the handful of questions that I was going to try and answer on the last episode. So this will be part two. So if you didn't listen to part one yet, you honestly don't even need to listen to part one. These are all separate questions anyway, but hopefully this will be another shorter episode as well. And again, sticking a little bit mostly to like the training, physical activity, exercise type of questions more than the nutrition stuff. So the first question that I want to start with today is my thoughts on stretching for 10 to 15 minutes daily. And are there any stretches that I would personally recommend? This is a kind of an interesting topic to me because it's something that I've changed my opinion on a lot over the last like 3 to 5 years. Now, I am somebody who has always personally liked stretching. Stretching has always been incorporated into the team sport type of practices and individual sports that I've done. And growing up and, you know, being surrounded by a lot of coaches, a lot of philosophies, whether it was static stretching or of like a dynamic warm-up where you're doing some stretches alongside, you know, skips and hops and jumps. And, you know, there's a lot of warm-up types, I guess we could say, as like I was growing up, and things that I grew accustomed to kind of enjoying, things that I felt were productive for me to help kind of warm up for a lot of the practices, the games, the workouts, the things that I was doing, you know, after doing those stretching sessions or even stretching after workouts and practices and whatnot. And then fast forward now, probably 2019, 2020, I start to get, you know, a little bit more immersed into kind of the hypertrophy world and actually looking at some of the research on stretching itself and surrounding, you know, my kind of social media feed with a lot of different ideologies and whatnot. And what I found and what I heard and, you know, from my own personal research and stuff that I've looked, you know, into on a lot of these topics, especially around stretching, shifted in a sense where it's like, I guess stretching might not be as important as we once thought it was, or as impactful or helpful as much as we thought it once was. And I've had this conversation with a good friend of mine, Eric, on one of our podcast episode. I honestly don't even know when that was, maybe last year. And we talked about stretching because he's a big advocate for stretching. And again, I'm somebody who has changed my stance and doesn't, it's not that I don't push it, but I don't really educate on it. I don't recommend it in a lot of situations. We'll talk about why here in a second. And it's just not something that's built into the practices and the things that I do personally with my training clients, the clients that I help, you know, get on a nice workout program, or we're starting to incorporate more cardio and doing Orange Theory and all that good stuff. But stretching isn't something that I'm recommending or building into most people's days, partly because we don't see the benefits that people maybe once thought there was that came from stretching. A lot of the research and what we see on stretching, especially in terms of like a pre kind of workout ritual, is that when you stretch and maybe you kind of quote unquote loosen your muscles a little bit, like that's not something that is giving you long-term benefits. It's mostly giving you short-term benefits. Meaning if you sit here and you bend over and you touch your toes and you hold that for 15 seconds and you do that a couple times and you do kind of these static stretches before you go into a workout, like you're essentially just borrowing flexibility. That's not necessarily something that is going to be sticking around over the long term. And a lot of times you'll hear these questions come in the context of like, oh, my back is super tight, or my shoulders are always really tight, or my hamstrings are always super, super tight. People just complaining that they're tight. And it's not necessarily, or the answer isn't necessarily you need to just stretch more. There's a lot of arguments, and I would argue that maybe you're weak in those positions, or maybe you're weak in those muscles, and that could be part of this discussion. But the other is, okay, like you doing more static stretches isn't necessarily going to give you pain relief, isn't necessarily going to give you more flexibility and more freedom to do things. as much as you actually training or lifting or working those muscles in the directions and the lengths that they're meant to be, you know, gone in. And that's where training comes into play here. That's where strategically planning what your workouts might look like. If you have someone sitting here and they're like, oh, my hammies are always really tight and I always feel, you know, like really stiff in the morning and, you know, I never feel really good. Like, you take that person and they aren't training. A lot of times they aren't, or maybe they aren't training intelligently, or maybe they're doing a lot of running, but you actually start to train their glutes. You start to train their hamstrings. You start doing a lot of RDLs. You start doing some hinge patterns. You start doing, you know, different unilateral work. You start doing reverse lunges. You start doing split squats. You start doing leg presses. You start doing maybe a different squat pattern and squat variations. Maybe you start doing a little bit more machine work and you start strengthening your hamstrings on a ham curl machine, for example, or using bands. Like that person doing that for 3 to 6 to 9 months is likely going to see a tremendous amount of benefit in their quote unquote tightness, how they feel, their pain, or how they perceive pain or discomfort in a lot of those regions that they were complaining about. And for those reasons, you cannot get that by just sitting on your butt and trying to touch your toes. Like, that's just not the same thing. Loading your muscles in the lengthened position with weight and becoming stronger in those positions are likely the thing that's going to take you to a place where you feel more mobile and more independent and less pain and less quote unquote stiffness or just feeling weak in a lot of these muscle groups. And so I know this is a long tangent. I'm going to answer this question here in a second, but one thing that I've done personally is I've seen my evolution and my thought process and my opinion on where stretching fits into this equation. And for all those reasons that I just listed out, for me, stretching isn't something I'm necessarily recommending to people unless we're doing the training and we're lifting and we're, you know, exercising consistently and you're going on walks. Like, unless those are in place, I wouldn't want you to take time away from those things to do more static stretching. Or maybe instead of you going into the gym and you stretching for 10 minutes and you're taking that 10 minutes away from how long you're allocating to be in the gym and you're doing more warm-up sets or you're doing a whole nother exercise or you're just doing lighter versions or lighter reps of the moves that you're prepared to do in your workout for the day, that for most people is just going to be a better use of their time and you're going to get a better return on your investment over time by spending more time doing that compared to static stretching. Now, I've gone so far on the other end of the stream where it's like, oh, no one should stretch, or that's not something that is helpful for anybody because you should be doing all this other stuff. When in reality, now I've come back to a place somewhere in the middle where it's like, yeah, stretching can and absolutely does have a place. I'm, again, personally, somebody who enjoys stretching. I feel temporary relief. I feel like, to me, I'd rather stretch than doom scroll TikTok or Instagram personally, right? Or watch a video and feel, or leave that video feeling empty where it's like, oh shit, maybe if I spent 10 minutes stretching or on the foam roller, I'm watching a TV show at the end of the night and I'm, you know, rolling my back out, or I'm doing a standing pigeon stretch on my kitchen table. Like, I feel better doing that. And again, is it long lasting? No, a lot of it is, you know, acute benefits, you know, acute changes, acute types of relief that we get when we do some stretching or we do foam rolling. But that's not to say that that has no additional benefit on people's lives. Like, even though some of it might be short lived, and again, I'm someone who trains 4 days a week and goes on one run a week, and I play sports and I play the volleyball, and I'm fairly active and I take care of myself from a nutrition standpoint, a hydration standpoint, get my daily steps. And so for me, adding stretching on top of that doesn't always make me feel like I'm spending my time wisely. But when I do that sometimes, or when I'm at a friend's house and we're watching a show and I get some inclination to roll out my ankle or roll out my foot or spend some time just like rotating my spine in different directions, for me personally, I do feel like I get some benefit. And quite frankly, man, you know, a lot of people like myself will sit on here and say, yeah, like, we have a finite amount of time to spend to our health and our fitness and our exercise and all that. And all that is very true. And they'll use that as a justification to dismiss stretching altogether. When, if we look at the distribution of time spent doing meaningless shit for most people throughout the course of the day, I'm willing to bet that we can find 5 to 15 minutes if you want. And again, a lot of this comes from screen time or taking time away from looking at screens or social media or cutting work off at a reasonable hour or not watching TV at the end of the night or doing these things while you're watching TV and doing some of this other stuff or implementing into a morning routine or an evening routine. Like, there's a lot of ways that I think most people can find time to spend thinking about their body, to spend working on mobility, to spend their time doing something that is giving attention, time, energy back into their body instead of having that time and energy being directed in other things that aren't really giving you a return at all. So I'm indifferent here. I'm not somebody that still recommends stretching for everybody all the time. It's not really what I'm saying, but I'm not opposed to it. And I'm on the spectrum now where it's like, I think it can have a place. And I think if you want to make it a priority, if you want to implement that day to day, I think the person who's more likely to do that is going to have less screen time, who is probably drinking enough water, who's probably getting their workouts in throughout the course of the week, who, is probably finding some peace of mind, spending time on their body undistracted, compared to somebody who's just always sped up throughout the course of the day, who's always looking at the next thing, who's always looking for these small dopamine hits. Like, man, sometimes breaking that routine up and spending time stretching is a perfect time to just kind of like chill the fuck out and have like kind of a small like meditative experience alongside that as well. So I think there's a lot of pros that can come from stretching outside of the kind of like the mechanical or acute mechanical changes that can happen with your muscles in that moment. So to answer this question, because the question did kind of ask like, are there stretches or would I recommend stretching? My thoughts are, if you want to do that and you want to make that a priority, fucking go crazy. Like, I try and do that. I probably do that 3 to 4 days a week. And I am just, I'm happy when I do it, but it's not something that if I miss, I feel like I'm missing out on. I want people to share that same sentiment where it's just, it's good time to give back to your body and to take time doing nothing sometimes, even though you're stretching. I think that could be really health promoting for a lot of people in terms of, you know, and again, like you spending 10 to 15 minutes stretching versus going on a walk and you're only getting 4,000 steps a day. Like those are trade-offs or things that I would say, maybe you're better off going on a walk, or maybe you're better off going on a light jog, or maybe that 10 to 15 minutes could be tacked on to the end of a workout and you can kind of spend time focusing on other muscle groups or other exercise selection. You can get more from your workouts if you're only training 2 days a week or 3 days a week. So, but again, this question I find is being asked. Usually it's like, hey, I'm hanging around the house and I don't have anything going on, or the kids are asleep, or I'm watching my favorite show tonight. It's like, absolutely, stretching can have a place. I honestly think just like doing things that you've done in the past that you know you can do well could be a good starting point for people if they haven't been stretching in a while. Sitting on the ground, I mentioned, doing static stretching. There is a place for doing more like hop skips and toe touches and doing things while you're walking. But unless you're running or getting ready for like a sprint workout or something, like doing some static stretching is probably more practical for a lot of people. But sitting on the ground, rotating your spine in different directions, there's a lot of things that we could do from a bending at the hips pattern from a stretching standpoint, I think could be helpful. I find like the standing pigeon stretch, if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. But lifting your leg up and putting kind of your shin and your leg like on a countertop or, on the bathroom counter, or you could do this sitting as well. Like you bringing your leg up and putting your heel or your foot on top of your opposite quad and kind of leaning over, pushing into that. So you can kind of feel it in kind of like your hip flexors almost. You feel it in your glutes. Works your psoas a little bit. But sitting in that position for 2 to 4 minutes a day and then switching legs, like that could also be a time where if you're texting or responding to work emails, like you could kill two birds with one stone, you know? So there's ways that you could stretch and do other things if you want. But I find just doing things that you feel comfortable with, if you have body parts or areas that you feel like need more attention, like I'm not going to sit here and walk through every single stretching routine because there's a million of them, but maybe looking up, and this is where YouTube could be a great resource, and just seeing what else is out there that you can start to incorporate daily that could be very low barrier to entry, I guess we could say. So over time, see if that 10 to 15 minutes is enough, or if that's something that is worth it to you, you find benefit in that. If it is, keep going. If not, or if you miss some days, just know you're not missing out on anything super impactful over the long term. Okay. Wow. Long response to that question, but I just wanted to talk about stretching in general, because I do think it can have a place, but it doesn't have as big of a place as a lot of people make it out to be. Okay. Next question is your thoughts on the cold plunge and sauna trends all over social media. They're expensive too for the tubs and equipment. Is it worth the hype or just another trend that will die out in the next year or two? I agree. This question last week inspired me to create this as a question on my check-in form for my clients for the week, because I wanted to just see if other people were being exposed to this, see if they had access to these things, see if they had experience or questions about some of this stuff. Because I agree, my social media feed is flooded with different advertisements. And for some reason, ever since I answered this question, I see all different types of like infrared sauna or regular sauna types of advertisements, in addition to the pop-up polar plunge kind of pools, or the actual like tubs that you could buy to put in your, you know, home gym or your backyard or your garage. And it's insane, because I look at the price tag on a lot of these things and it's like $3,000, $4,000 for a lot of this shit. It's just expensive, but it's definitely has infiltrated the market. And quite frankly, it's become more popular with a lot of different personalities making bold and untruthful claims when it comes to, I'm thinking of like Gary Brecka here right now, where I just picture he had a talk at some fake TEDx thing on stage, and he's like, nothing will incinerate fat off your body quicker than getting in cold water. It's like, holy shit. If you actually look at the research and you actually look at the data that we have on some of these things, like you getting in an ice bath every single day is not going to make any meaningful difference in your metabolism, in your burning of body fat. You know, there's a lot of claims around actual cold plunge and whatnot from like a metabolic health standpoint. But it's hilarious to me, because you see so many claims and it's easy to get interested. It's easy to get caught up in it. It's easy to ask these kind of questions. And I'm happy you asked this question, because there's a lot of, there's some small truths, but a lot of extrapolated data that isn't actually supportive and isn't actually going to be helpful for the mass population at the end of the day. But if we break them up into the two different categories for the cold plunge pool or just ice baths in general, right? Like there are ways to do that for free. And so if you do like that, and if you do want to do that, I implore you to go to your like local river or, you know, go into a lake, or like we fortunately live in an area where there's cold water around us everywhere year round. So it's a little bit more accessible versus someone sitting here, like listen, in New Mexico or Arizona, it's like super hot year round. It's like, maybe you don't even need to buy a polar or a cold plunge pool. You can find a, you know, a little spa or something that has it as well. But when it comes to the benefits of cold plunge and just like cold water exposure in general, you'll see a lot of them out there. But the thing that I've found to be true, both from my anecdotal experience and speaking with clients, and honestly, even just like seeing what some of the research says on this topic, is the mental toughness, the resilience, the impact it has on controlling your emotions and your breath, and trying to just maintain your cool, for lack of better words, while you're in this miserably cold water, can do wonders for people mentally. And I cannot discount that, because a lot of people have this experience where they start to polar plunge, or they start to get into cold water consistently, and they see benefits happen in other areas of their life because they're exposing themselves to freezing cold water every day or two times a week or four times a week. And part of the reason behind that is, like, if you can imagine you going into your, you know, horse trough in the morning and it's cold as shit, and you sit in there for 2 to 3 minutes or 4 minutes, however long people are sitting in there these days, that I would argue is probably one of the tougher things that that person is going to do the rest of the day. Like full stop, like you intentionally putting yourself in that level of discomfort, it's going to do dividends on you later in the day when you have a stressful work meeting or you have a tough discussion with your family member or your spouse, or, you know, when you're going to the gym later and you're trying to do a working set. It's like you doing this thing that is really difficult is going to make the other difficult things that you feel later in the day feel a little bit easier. And I think that's something that we need to acknowledge that could be a huge benefit for people. And something that, you know, I can sit up here and shit on why the research says it's not super impactful from a recovery standpoint, or how it can attenuate muscle growth, and, you know, how there are better things that we could be doing to, you know, spend our time on our health and our fitness that are going to give you a bigger return on your investment. But again, it's like the people sitting here doing the polar plunges and the cold plunge stuff are also the people who usually have everything else dialed in fairly well too, or who are at least paying attention to a lot of the other things. And this kind of like quote unquote health promoting behavior can again bleed into other areas of your life. So I think this like mental toughness, mental kind of resilience is probably pretty good for people if they want to expose themselves to that and see if it makes a difference in their life. Now, when we look from a recovery standpoint, you know, sure, when we're talking about high performing, high level athletes, or we're talking about people who are doing double days or who have back-to-back game days, right? Collegiate athletes, professional athletes, endurance athletes, like people who need to recover from their training sessions quicker so they can be at a higher operating capacity the next time they go into their competition, or the next time they go into their long run, or the next time they, you know, are doing their workout later in the day or the next day. Getting into cold water can help with that recovery process, maybe alleviate some soreness, help reduce inflammation, and help people get to a place where they're feeling more fresh so they can handle more of that stress the next day and so forth. So it absolutely can and does have a place, especially for high performing athletes and people. Now, a lot of people listening to this podcast do not meet that criteria. You're not somebody who's a semi-professional or a professional football player, baseball player. It's like, I'm going to guess that most people listening to the podcast are kind of like myself, just the general population looking to be healthy, looking to trying to take care of their health in any way that they can. And you being distracted, or you get your attention grabbed by a lot of these kind of like, you know, claims and devices and things and trends out there. This is where I anticipate this question is coming from. And for that person, for the general public person, I don't suspect that that is something that people need to start incorporating more or go out of their way to start doing more if they have all the other big rocks down. It's just not going to be as meaningful over time in terms of metabolic health and physical health and fuck, even mental health. It's like if somebody sitting here and they're like, should I go see a therapist or should I get an ice bath? It's like, motherfucker, you should go to therapy first, right? Like, but again, all these people who maybe have all these things in check, and you have time and you have resources, or you have the ability to meet up with your friends every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. to jump in the river close by. Like, I think that could be fun. I think that could be helpful. I think the community aspect around that can also be very helpful from a human nature standpoint. Just your sense of belongingness, if you want to include other people alongside that or have a shared interest with other people. But again, if we look at a lot of the data, like would normal people lifting 3 to 5 times a week and who are just generally interested in improving their health and getting stronger and building muscle, we have actually had some research show that ice baths, especially around your lifting sessions, can attenuate muscle growth, meaning it can maybe blunt the full effects that you're getting or the adaptations that you are getting from your training sessions. Because again, ice baths and immersing yourself in this really cold water can reduce inflammation. But we need that inflammation for the, you know, normal people out here lifting 3 to 5 times a week. We need that inflammation after a workout to run its course to get the benefits from that workout and to adapt to stimulate muscle protein synthesis and then get to a place where we can handle more of that load in the future. So people sitting here and they're like, oh, I lift and then I go immediately into the ice bath and I do that every time I work out. Like, I'd make an argument that that might be doing more harm than actual benefit in certain cases. So long story short, there are times and places for it. And we can be strategic with, you know, when we do that and how we use that around our training. And again, what you're doing those things for, especially from a cold water immersion type of practice here. But no, my answer is like, that's not something that you should be seeking out and making a priority and doing every single day if you're not doing the sleep, the hydration, the, you know, nutrition, the daily steps, lifting, getting a cardio session in, all the things that we need to do to be healthy. Those are always going to outweigh the benefits that we might get from cold water, you know, immersion. But again, not to say that there's no benefits with that, but I don't want you stepping or putting your foot into a cold water bath if we're not really dialed in or really taking the other stuff seriously. You thinking you're getting in an ice bath 3 days a week and you're not lifting and you're ordering Uber Eats 3 nights a week and you're not getting a ton of steps in throughout the course of the day and you're super sedentary at night. It's like, man, that person sitting in the ice bath will be missing out on opportunities and benefits that they could get elsewhere, and them focusing their time or money or whatever attention onto that thing could just be a net negative over the long term. So hopefully that answers your question about cold plunges. I'm not against them. I'm not somebody that's sitting here saying everybody should do them. I do them periodically, maybe once a week. My friend has I mentioned the horse trough earlier, but he has a horse trough with water that it gets pretty cold here at night. So it's freezing. Sometimes you got to break the ice to get in there, but once a week, once every other week, I'll get in there and maybe on, you know, a rest day, and I enjoy it. It's fun. It's something we get to do together. They also have a hot tub, so we kind of go from hot to cold, which is kind of nice. But again, it's something that I'll partake in and that I do find benefit for myself in, but I'm not going to sit here and make an argument that it's a tier one, two, or three level of importance when it comes to improving your health over the long term. Now, when it comes to saunas, you know, I blanket sauna, like there's so many different types of saunas. There's infrared saunas, which we'll kind of spend maybe more time talking about today because that's kind of the ads that I'm seeing. It's also something that I have experience with. My mom has an infrared sauna and I'll also sit in there when I can. I love dry heat saunas, to be honest with you. Like I enjoy sweating. I love the experience. I love sitting there for 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. There's steam rooms as well. Like there's a lot of different types of saunas that somebody could step into. I would probably, if we had to rank them, I would probably say infrared saunas are maybe one of the tier one, if we're looking at the comparison between all the others. But infrared saunas, just having kind of a different mechanism of action. From my understanding, infrared saunas, they kind of emit infrared light, and that light and that energy kind of penetrates your skin, and it, your body absorbs that and it almost heats internally, or your body temperature can increase, you know, with that infrared at a slower pace and at a kind of a less extreme environment compared to you going into a traditional sauna where there's just the coals or it's just 180 degrees and the room around you is really hot, and then your body starts to sweat in response to that. So infrared is a little bit different, where it almost heats your body from the inside out. My infrared sauna experts might correct me, you know, or fine-tune some of that mechanism of action there. But in general, there might be a benefit to that, because when we look at skin health or we look at like potentially pain relief, but for most people, I think the circulatory benefits that you get, improved like vasodilation and oxygen delivery and blood flow, some of the cardiovascular benefits you might get from going in an infrared sauna, or honestly, a lot of saunas in general, I think could have benefits. And even if we look head to head of like ice baths and saunas, we see maybe there'd be a slight advantage to hot exposure in the form of like bathtub, hot tub, maybe even saunas compared to the actual cold exposure, where again, you're kind of reducing that inflammation and you're kind of minimizing that after a session, where the infrared saunas or the regular saunas or the hot exposure can kind of complement that recovery process, can improve blood flow and circulation and, you know, get you sweating. And you got to remember that, you know, your skin is one of the biggest organs in the body, right? And part of our body's detoxification process happens through the skin and through the sweat glands. So when you're sweating periodically, that can be helpful as well. So comparing both of them, I would maybe put there's benefits for both, obviously, but you know, if you can get your hands on someone else's sauna, you can sit in there once a week, and same with the ice bath, right? These are not things that you need to go buy. If you do want to buy them, you want to invest your money into them, I do think there can be benefits to both of these things. But again, on the hierarchy of importance of what it means to take care of your health, infrared saunas and cold plunge pools just aren't the thing that most people need to be spending their money on. If you are looking at your expenses and it's like, hey, I need to, you know, spend my money on a gym membership and food and groceries and all this stuff for the week, and you look and it's like, I could get this $3,000 infrared sauna. Like, most people don't have that disposable income. And for those reasons, I'd rather have people spend the money on the gym memberships or the group classes or the personal training or, you know, the nutrition coaches or dietitians out there, right? Like, spending your money on that for a period of time. And then as you accumulate wealth or interest or you start to have really good health over time, and you can start to focus on the sprinkles, I guess we could say, if you listen to my podcast with Tony Castillo a couple episodes ago, like, you know, if we're looking at a donut, like the sprinkles are the things like supplements or some of these other types of, devices and things that might have a small benefit that can be worth it, but are not the base. And again, I just don't want people sitting here thinking that these things are the base. But biggest con of these, again, for a lot of people, is going to be the price tag associated with it. Like, most people like don't need to be going and spending thousands of dollars on these things. And again, if you want to find a membership to a place, because they're everywhere these days too, that offers those services, and you go there a few times a month, like, that might be a better investment than you spending your money on your own, where, again, everyone has those types of workout equipments or their shared experience where it's like, oh, I got the NordicTrack bike or the Peloton and I used it a lot for the first month, but now it just collects dust and I haven't used it in the last 3 months, you know, and they start selling it. Like, those happen a lot with saunas and cold plunge pools and whatnot too. So I just think there's a way to get into them. I think there's a way to experiment with them. I think there's benefits. There can be benefits for a lot of them, but again, it's not something that is a deal breaker when it comes to people's health and fitness over time. So hopefully that answers that question. Next question here is, thoughts on people selling programs in the fitness industry while taking anabolics and not disclosing that? And this is a big subject for me. This is something that I have noticed a lot and feel very passionately about, because I see this happening all the time. And why it's close to home for me is because I'm also somebody that sits out here and puts out education and shares my knowledge and is trying to be a decent health communicator, fitness communicator. And posting that type of content, showing up here, doing the podcast, those aren't the things that do as well as me posting a shirtless photo or whatever it is every single day after the gym and just showing off my body. And I've thought about doing that, and I've gone through different seasons of my life where I'm more fit or maybe a little less fit, quote unquote fit, because I'm bulking and whatnot. So my body is definitely something that I take serious and that I care about myself, but it hasn't been a marketing strategy for me. And I see that happening a lot these days with men and women, because that is a very popular way to sell programs and, to gain followers and to get caught in the algorithm and to gain credibility at the end of the day. And so a lot of people out here are leaning on these systems that, you know, these social media platforms are almost rewarding in a way. Like, I'm almost not even pissed off at the influencers and the bodybuilders and the really fit people themselves. It's like, I'm almost more pissed off at the system that it kind of perpetuates all of these types of accounts or this ideology and this thought process around like what health means and what people are looking for. And my feed is no different than a lot of people's in the health space, where I can look on my Instagram home feed right now and it's just a bunch of quote unquote beautiful men and women shirtless, training, looking shredded, getting summer body ready, selling programs, supplements, doing what I eat in a day. It's just, that's the kind of shit that sells. But underneath the hood, again, not faulting them necessarily, but it's gotten so bad now that people are Photoshopping. And I think Goob does a really good job online. If you don't follow Goob, you, G-O-O-B-U on Instagram, you should. He's kind of a dude that calls out people for editing their photos, especially in the online fitness space. You know, some of the best physiques in the world, like the top 1% on these platforms, are editing their photos, which again exacerbates kind of the problem that we're dealing with here, which is like chasing perfection and chasing an image and chasing this idea of what health and fitness is, when in reality, that is not even close to what good quote unquote health looks like. I'm using a lot of quotations today. I just realized that, but there's so many types of caveats here. And I think when people go online and they see somebody with a big butt and abs and big biceps and they're very vascular, it's like, we think that that's what optimal health looks like, when in reality, man, like that is not even close of what it means to be healthy. And there's a lot of instances where those people might be further away from health than what people might appreciate. And if we look at even like NHANES data and, you know, certain kind of like data points in terms of like health, longevity, and what ideal like body fat percentages might be, like the body fat percentage that most people need to thrive and be healthy at, and that can be very fit at, is a lot higher than what we think it is. And our perception of what it means to be fit is just so distorted and fucked up right now that it's really difficult to see that as an average consumer. So I empathize with people, and I get worked up over these kinds of conversations or these types of questions, because it directly kind of impacts me at some level, but it's the stuff that I'm fighting against. It's the stuff that I'm talking about even right now, where I'm trying to be a voice of reason for other people. It's not that I know everything here and that I'm the gatekeeper of all this shit and I'm the best at what I do. It's not what I'm saying, but it is something that directly impacts me and my business and my exposure and the clients that I work with as well, and the future clients that I'm working with who come to me and they're like, yep, you know what, I tried keto and intermittent fasting into the 5-day fast, and I just tried to get super shredded and I haven't been able to get there, and I need your help to do that. And like, people are coming to me with these goals of like, I want to have a 6-pack, I want to have 10% or less body fat, and I want to be able to rock my shirt off and look super shredded. And it's like, okay, cool, like we can do that, that's an option. But is that the thing you actually want, right? Is that the thing that you actually need? Is that the thing that's going to make you happy? Or is that just what society and social media and all these kind of outlets have kind of, you know, planted in your brain, this idea that that's what it takes to be happy and for you to feel good in your skin? And in all reality, that's just overwhelmingly not the case for most people. I know a lot of people can identify that, right? They're like, hey, I want to be healthy and I just want to live longer and I want to have good blood markers and I want everything to you know, work out, and I want to, you know, live as healthy and as long as I can. And I love that. And there's always that, but I also want this, or I also want to look shredded. But you do not need to be shredded to accomplish that goal that you're after. And so, long story short, when you see this type of marketing or messaging or these types of accounts popping up everywhere, and they show you the perfect angles and they show you what their ideal physique looks like, or they show you the screenshot of what they look like on stage at their bikini competition, or them posing with the perfect lighting and flex and pump at the end of their workouts, it's like, that's what we're comparing ourselves to, when in reality, they aren't even showing you everything or disclosing everything that went into that photo, or what is, you know, what is part of their reality at the moment as well. And fortunately, PEDs or performance enhancing drugs, steroids, anabolic type of, you know, illegal substances, you know, these like stacks that people are using are not being disclosed, and people are comparing themselves to people that they have no business comparing themselves to. And those same people, ironically, are also sometimes, excuse me, editing their photos and not even showing you the photos that they want you to see, because they are also self-conscious and they're editing their photos and they're doing things to distort these images to make you think that they look even better than they are. And again, those are the people that we are getting inspiration from. Those are the people that we're trying to look like. And it's going to be a never-ending battle, and it's going to be something that drives you to the ground and drives you crazy until you know the truth, until you can appreciate the fact that, yeah, you know what, in order to look like your favorite female influencer, man, you might have to lift and do all these things for 10 years and be a bikini competitor and take the DeLorean back in time and get different genetics and, you know, maybe disclose or start taking these anabolic steroids and some of these types of performance enhancing drugs in order to get that physique. And again, with those types of commitments come trade-offs later down in life. Like a lot of kids, and I say kids, but like 18, 19, 20 year olds, people in their 20s right now are taking these performance enhancing drugs. Again, telling themselves that they're acknowledging that there could be potential trade-offs and consequences in the future, but they're just letting future selves deal with those things. And that is an issue because all these people that we're looking up for, it's almost making that type of approach okay. It's almost like making this system continue to run full throttle here. And not many people are sitting here stopping and questioning some of those things. So I think it's dishonest. It's disingenuous. It's so many different type of descriptive words. It's criminal in a lot of situations where people are selling products and things based on the way they look when they're not even telling you about what it took to get there, or not disclosing that, you know, they're taking $10,000 worth of, you know, performance enhancers on top of that. And they're telling you that you using their low carb sauce and following their diet plan or working with them coaching is what's going to help you look like them. It's just, it's never going to happen. And I'm happy more and more people are becoming aware of this. And these conversations I think can be helpful for a lot of people because I want you to appreciate that these things do exist. And again, it's not everybody, and not everybody is, you know, out to get you. Like a lot of people are out here trying to make a living, but again, a lot of that comes at your expense. And I just want you as the consumer to be more of an informed decision maker when you are consuming content and comparing yourself and drawing inspiration from a lot of these people online. You know, and in the fitness industry, it's not even just unique to this space as well. Like, I remember, I think when I answered this question in my Q&A, I talked about how it's very similar to like the, you know, skincare or the makeup or whatever else, you know, all my ladies out there can identify this with this a little bit better, but it's like, man, you have a model or somebody showing you their lotion or their three-step skin routine at the end of the night. And that person is claiming that this skincare routine is the reason that they look so good, when underneath the hood, they've gotten Botox, cosmetic surgery, different teeth, you know, I've had a ton of work done. Maybe they don't even use that product. They do something completely different, but they're just being sponsored or paid for by this company to advertise their product. And in reality, they're not disclosing all the actual truths when it comes to sponsoring this product or telling you about some of these things. And I find it's very similar to the health and fitness space, where it's just like, yeah, we think that, you know, us following in someone else's footsteps or us following and replicating what their night routine is or what their workout program is or what they eat every day and what their cheat meals look like, that all of a sudden we're going to wake up looking like that person or wake up looking like we are our 2.0 shredded selves. And that's just not really the reality that most people, if not everybody, is going to experience when it comes to this kind of stuff. So when you acknowledge that in the first place, it's going to save you a fuck ton of headache, ton of frustration, and likely get you to a place where you're feeling more good, confident, and proud of the results that you've seen a lot quicker than you spinning in this fucking never-ending hamster wheel, thinking you're going to look like somebody else when in reality you'd got to do things way different and things that are very expensive and potentially illegal and just also jeopardizing your health in certain contexts. And if most people knew that, they wouldn't be putting these people on as high of a platform or looking at them in that same light. But a lot of people kind of get blind when they see the good looking bodies. And that's the only thing we see. It's just a bad place to be in, if I haven't made my point clear. So hopefully that answers that question. But yeah, I see that shit happen a lot. And it's just something that really hits home for me because it's something that I've been impacted before, but again, I see the downstream effect where I have clients who are coming to me and those are conversations. These are things that we're talking about. These are, types of information that we're kind of working through together just to be able to get them to a place where they actually feel good about their choices and their body and their health overall. And when you realize that you don't have to be super shredded or look like a, you know, freak athlete to be happy and healthy, I think that's a good thing for people, but it's just getting people on the same page in the beginning so we can start to make meaningful progressions over time. That's where the magic happens for most. Last question I have here, this will be a quick one, is what three things can I What three things can't you hit the gym without? That's funny. When I'm thinking about this even now and how it would change my answer, but there's not a lot of things that outside of my gym bag that like I feel like I need. My answer to this was one, VersaGrips or lifting straps. If you don't have lifting straps and you're in the market for some, VersaGrips are phenomenal. I've had one pair for the last 5 years and they are incredible. And you'll realize that when you start using these things for your pulling motions and your lower body days, and you know, every time that you're kind of holding onto dumbbells or a barbell or a machine and you're pulling or you're holding onto something, you realize how much your grip is the limiting factor in a lot of these movements. And when we can bypass that and actually continue to challenge the muscles that we're working and not worry about whether or not we're going to be able to hold on to the weight, that's when you start to see your lifts go up, your progress go up, your training quality improve a lot. And like you getting lifting straps is likely a key missing link if you don't have them already to getting closer to where you want to be. So VersaGrips are huge. I'm not somebody that's sponsored by them. I'm not being paid to say this by any means, but any type of lifting strap I think is an incredible investment. And honestly, I think I use my VersaGrips every single day I go into the gym, whether it's a lower or upper body day. So that is always going to be number one. Two is headphones. Like I personally, I'm not somebody that can go into a gym and just listen to the sounds around me, even though I've experimented with that sometimes, but I just need something to listen to. Selfishly, I'm not a huge social guy when I get to the gym, even though I see similar people a lot. I'm not somebody that's going and talking for 10 minutes between a set. Like I'm very antisocial, I guess we could say, when it comes to me being in the gym. And I appreciate that a lot of people use gym as their social hour. So I get that. But for me, when I have headphones in, I'm almost like, I'm giving myself permission not to like engage in conversation sometimes. So that definitely plays into it. But on the other end, it's like I need music or a podcast or something to listen to while I'm doing my workouts, because I find that I get better quality lifts and I enjoy my time there more. And I'm also somebody that really enjoys music, and I have a ton of different playlists. And if I could pick one thing that I could like immerse myself into in a space, it's probably music, and not making music, but just like interpreting it, listening to it and talking about it. Like I've really found a lot of enjoyment listening to music and exploring different artists, and just something that I look forward to outside of the normal health, fitness, clients, you know, what I do, sports, cooking, like all the stuff I do day to day. Music is one of those outlets for me that has brought me a lot of peace and joy over the last, you know, 15 years of my life, and it's no different today. So I'm not somebody that can live without headphones when I go to the gym. So that is also something that I cannot go to the gym without. And I will not work out sometimes if I don't have headphones or if I don't have the ability to listen to anything in some of these workouts. I will go home, get my headphones, and then come back, assuming I have time and, you know, my schedule permits for that. The last thing I would say, and it's still hard for me because I can't think of many things else. There's a lot of like pieces of equipment and stuff that I think could be useful and fun. But I've found a lot of success in Legion's non-stimulative, non-stim pre-workout powder. So caffeine-free pre-workout. I know people are like, what the fuck are you doing taking a not, you know, caffeine-free pre-workout? Does that defeat the point? I have a podcast on this actually. I remember talking about this one of my very first 10 episodes. So you can go back. I think it was a Q&A. I talk about caffeine-free pre-workout stuff. But for me personally, taking that, just the act of taking something before I go to the gym or as I get to the gym, it almost like helps me flip that switch a little bit where it's like, hey, you know, I have this something, or maybe this pre-workout is like, you know, beta-alanine and has a lot of different like nootropics and stuff that can kind of help you concentrate, which I appreciate. I don't take it every time, but my peak weeks, weeks 3, 4, 5 of training, times when I'm not as motivated, taking this can help me get out of that, you know, go through the motion mood and help me train a little bit harder. And I found that having that available and not relying on it, but just having it available has been really helpful for me personally. I know a lot of people can feel that way about regular pre-workout or coffee or other types of supplements that they might take in and around their gym sessions. But for me, doing the caffeine-free stuff has been really helpful for me. I do work out mostly in the morning, so I probably could take the caffeine-free, but I don't personally drink caffeine. I'm crazy and a psycho and weirdo, I know, but doing the stim-free stuff has been really helpful. So I found that that's something that I can live without it, but it definitely adds to the quality of my workouts when that product is needed. So that would be the thing that rounds out kind of my my essentials when it comes to working out. But yeah, VersaGrips and headphones, probably the two things that I couldn't actually live without. Fun question to end on. I'm going to end this podcast now. It's funny. I'm just thinking back to my last episode. I think that was like 25, 30 minutes, but this would have been like over an hour podcast. So I don't know what I was thinking hitting record, knowing I only had 30 minutes on my last episode to try and answer all these questions. So I'll learn one day, but today is not the day. And I hope you enjoyed this one. If you stuck all the way through, we'll be doing some more training stuff here in the near future, or just exercise related things. I love the nutrition piece, but it's also fun to dive into the other stuff that the health and fitness space can offer. So hopefully you enjoyed this one. Thank you for everyone who asked questions as always. And until next time, remember to do with a purpose, train with attention, think with confidence as you work towards your own nutrition and fitness goals. I'll see you in the next episode. We'll talk soon. Peace. Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.